Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. And, of course, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. D-Mace, Willie D, I loved seeing your slide skills on display last night. Willie hosted Stars Trivia at Boombaz East last night, and for the kids, Willie and D-Mace slid down a completely ice-covered slide.
Yes.
And it was a sight to see. I do have a video to show the people. So good to see y'all today. How we doing?
Yes, and thank you guys for coming out last night and supporting Stars. Thanks to Cliff McArdle and our entire staff here at 102.5 The Game for helping us promote the event. It was a fun night. Hope you guys had fun.
Had a blast.
We did.
And that was off script. Fig, we have a lot of events we have over the years. D-Mace, I remember the AFC Championship game when the Titans lost to the Chiefs. You and I were over there doing a show. And then the whole place was knocked down by the tornado and then rebuilt in 2020. So they've been through a lot. But Fig's been through there the entire time. He sort of took over last night. He offered, you know, if anybody would make a donation to Stars of $100, that D-Mace and I would go down the ice-covered slide. So D-Mace and I did it for the money, for the cause.
Went down the ice luge.
It was an ice luge. So we're thinking about going after a Winter Olympics bid.
Yeah, I think we can bobsledding.
Bobsledding, the luge.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, all
we
these.
We can do it.
You two are cool runnings in and of itself. Well, thanks for bringing us out, Willie. It was a blast.
Yeah,
and I'm
that
excited
was
for the
great.
Next one. I want to get into this because it's the Senior Bowl week, and we know there are GMs and head coaches there, head coaches across college football, head coaches across the league. Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel are both there. Jim Wyatt is there as well. So Jim Wyatt sat down with Mike Vrabel yesterday in Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl and was asking him about what are you looking for, what are you here for, so on and so forth. Now, I have said so many times, I believe that I speak fluent Vrabelese. If not quite fluent, close to fluent. But sometimes I have to question my own Vrabelese. Sometimes I ask myself, am I looking too far into this? Am I trying to find some Vrabelese in whatever he is saying? Or is Mike Vrabel really actually telling us a whole lot without really telling us anything? So I'm reading through this article between this conversation between Jim Wyatt and Mike Vrabel, and you can find this article. It's up at TennesseeTitans.com. Jim Wyatt doing a great job, as he always does. And Jim Wyatt asks him about some things that he is looking for. He's talking about some of the interviews. What do you look for in the interviews? And Mike Vrabel mentions, you know, we're looking for guys who talk, you know, who say the right things, but it's not just saying the right things. It's about doing the right things as well. And he talks about, we're looking for guys that, you know, are dedicated, guys who love ball. Of course, all of the Vrabel things, the Tennessee Titans culture core kind of things. And then he talks about guys that are strong at the line of scrimmage and guys who run good routes. And I thought, well, that's pretty interesting. When Mike Vrabel's talking about what he's looking for at the Senior Bowl, he's talking about guys who are running routes and guys who are strong at the line of scrimmage. And to be fair, the top quarterbacks in this draft aren't at the Senior Bowl.
No.
You know, C.J. Stroud's not a senior. Bryce Young is not a senior. Will Levis declined the invitation.
Hendon Hooker is there, but he can't do anything.
Yeah, Hendon Hooker can't do anything. And Will Levis not accepting the invite to the Senior Bowl is a bad taste in my mouth for Will Levis. But that's a different story for a different day. And then I read this. Mike Vrabel says, I think you're always trying to get faster, which is something that he has mentioned so many times. He mentioned it in his postseason press conference. He mentioned it in his press conference the day that Rand Carthon was announced as Titans general manager. He says, and I think you're always trying to be good at the line of scrimmage. Okay, interesting.
Yes, very.
Vrabel says, you see teams that are still playing have elite quarterbacks, but there's an element of speed and playmaking on those teams as well. Reading through what Mike Vrabel said about being fast at the line of scrimmage, being really strong up front, saying, yeah, other teams have elite quarterbacks, but they also have these other things. I think Mike Vrabel might have just given away his number one priority and what he is looking for at the Senior Bowl and what the Titans' number one priority is this offseason, and it's offensive line. Playing fast on the offensive line, playing strong on the offensive line.
Yeah, I think you know, and those were two of the, you know, sort of issues with the Titans this whole season. You know, whether it be the offensive line because of the injury or the receivers because of the injury, or the receivers, you know, couldn't get separation, minus Treylon Burks. And when he says speed, I look at it a little bit different. I think a lot of people look at it as, oh, he needs a 4-3 guy, a 4-2 guy. No, I think speed is, and he mentioned it, listen, we're interviewing these guys throughout the week. You want to see how they sort of, not sort of, but how they pick up on concepts quickly. Because you only got less than a week, really, to absorb this playbook and then go out there on the practice field and in an actual game and display your talent. So to him, I think it's all about not necessarily foot speed, but it's, okay, are these young men learning these concepts quickly, which allows them to play faster when they're on the field? Again, everybody doesn't run a 4-4. Everybody doesn't run 4-3. There's only a few that run 4-2s. And to me, speed ain't everything, because I can point you to a lot of guys that got a lot of speed but are not playing or hasn't made the NFL. Speed to me is learning that playbook, being able to go out there and play and not think. That speed to me is mental speed, which equates to foot speed to me. Because if I'm thinking about what I'm doing, I'm not playing as fast as I can. If I go out there and I've learned that playbook and I know what to do, then I'm playing. I'm just going. You don't see any hiccups. You don't see any hesitation. When you don't know that playbook, the fastest guy will be slowed down. Why? Because he's thinking about what he's doing.
That's a really interesting concept you're talking about, Derek. And I hear a direct parallel when I hear the coaches talk about the Predators, that they're playing faster. One of the reasons that they've come out of the hole to a degree, they're playing faster, and it doesn't have to do with just how fast of a skater you are. And I do think the theme that you picked up on, Caroline, is right, because I heard Mike Vrabel say, I think his quote was at the end of the year press conference, I didn't watch us play enough and say to myself, we're the faster team. He felt like the other team was faster too many times this past year. So you're right, Derek. It's not necessarily just your 40 time, but you got to be able to play faster. You got to be the quicker team. Explosiveness. Like A.J. Brown, I don't know what he ran the 40 in, but I know when A.J. Brown catches the ball in stride, he is really, really good, and he just popped up on our TV screen right now, at just exploding from the point of the catch, getting by that first guy, and getting accelerated into the second level. So it's not like he catches the bomb every time. It's not just the old Oakland Raiders, you know, you got to attack and stretch the defense.
Verticals.
That's part of it. Right, the vertical is part of it.
Yes,
but
it is.
It's also guys who, you know, can take a five-yard hitch, make a guy miss, and accelerate and turn it into explosive plays. The Titans lack that on the field, for sure.
I can look at guys, and we can go down to the most noticeable guy, obviously, is Jerry Rice. He ran a 4.5, you know, sub 4.5 in the combine. But when you watched him on the field, he played faster than everybody else. Why? Because he knew exactly what he was doing, knew exactly where he needed to be, played with confidence. Anquan Boldin, he probably was a 4.6 guy, but if you watched him on the field, he played faster than what his time was. Why? Because he understood and knew what he was supposed to be doing out there. Hell, myself, I ran a 4.5 flat in the combine, but I played a lot faster. Why? Because I knew what I was doing. There was no hesitation. There was no thinking. I read the defense very quickly and got into my route. So foot speed is good. It's good to have foot speed. But if you have that foot speed and don't know what you're doing out there, then it neutralizes you, because you're not going to go out there and play with confidence. You're not going to go out there and play 100%. Why? Because you're, one, you're thinking about, am I doing the right thing? Am I going to make a mistake? And it's just a lot of hesitancy in your play.
Rand Carthon talked to Mike Heath at the Senior Bowl, and I don't have the clip, but he said something along the lines of, if you invite me over to your house and we take our own separate cars, you're going to get there faster than me because you know the route. Mm-hmm. You know how to get there. I got to plug in my phone, and then I'm looking down at my phone looking like, okay, I need to turn left in 400 feet. Is that past the light? Is that not past the light? So same kind of idea.
Exactly.
That when you know what you are doing, when you have your assignment, you get there faster, and you don't need to think about it. You just do. But, and I know that can apply to any position. That can apply to guys running their routes. That can apply to the quarterback. That can apply defensively. But just everything combined to me, I think that that's the takeaway that I got from this sit-down between Mike Vrabel and Mike Keith.
So, Caroline,
yeah,
should we assume, and Willie, should we assume by them saying that, even Vrabel saying that, that maybe some of these guys that they had in on this team didn't know exactly what to do at all times, and he's looking for guys that can absorb the playbook and then go out there and implement it?
Well, I would say
I think it's a good question. Like, is he talking more about who he wants to add, or is he looking for more from guys that he already has? Like, I think we all agree Okonkwo is a guy that as the season went on, he does seem to have that ability to accelerate. He plays fast, right? Or
yeah, you can tell he started to learn the playbook more. That's why they wasn't playing him at the beginning of the season, because he probably didn't know the playbook.
So he looks like a guy that could add to that ingredient that they're looking for. I'm curious about how they feel about Burks with that. Like, what's Burks' ceiling if he can improve in those areas, right? He's got some tools. We all agree on that. But how high are we talking? Do they see him as a year in and year out number one? That's the hope, I'm sure. But as they look at him, what do you see in that? How much can he improve in the things you're talking about? Doing things to know what he's doing more, understanding more, so he can play faster.
I think he can. I think I've seen enough of his ability to play the position from an athletic standpoint. I think he has every tool that you need. But, you know, for him, I think it's the playbook. And this is why I think now that Vrabel has said this, I think it's very important for them to really get their offensive coordinator ASAP. Because I think within the next week, 2 weeks, that they will be able to name their offensive coordinator. I think if it goes longer than that, which I don't expect it to or anticipate it going past that, When you tend to go longer, it's bad for everybody else, you know?
Depends on who it is.
Yeah, but what I'm saying from this standpoint, it's bad for everybody else on the team, because we got to – if you bring in a new guy, we got to absorb this playbook. So if you're taking your time, which you should, to make the right hire, but you got to understand the longer you take, the harder – the less time that they're going to have to absorb this playbook.
And I'm glad you bring up the offensive coordinator. Uh-huh. Because in this sit-down between Mike Keith and I don't know why I almost just said Tom Vrabel. Mike Keith and Mike Vrabel.
Okay, there we go.
Thank you very much.
The evil twin.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Because I have Tom Brady on the brain. Jeez. Mike Keith and Mike Vrabel. Uh-huh. Mike Vrabel said something about the offensive coordinator that made me very confused. So I want the three of us to talk through that. And, of course, your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Mike, on filling the spots on your staff, offensive coordinator, have you talked to some guys yet? And how's that process coming?
I would say the process is going well. I'm excited with the numerous people that we've been able to meet and interview. That's been the bulk of my time has been doing that since the season ended, and excited where it's at, excited the ideas, and nothing really new to report, but we've had, there's some spots that we have to fill.
There you go. That was Mike Vrabel at the end of the year press conference, asked about the offensive coordinator position. Now, D-Mace, you bring up, before they move forward with targets that they want to find offensively, whether that's quarterback, whether that's offensive line, whether that's receiver, so on and so forth, you got to find your offensive coordinator. And Mike Vrabel even said at the end of the year press conference, we change things every year in terms of changing the scheme. So kind of sidestepping the question. But we do know that the Tennessee Titans have reached out to Eric Bieniemy, Chiefs offensive coordinator, and also Matt Nagy, Chiefs quarterback coach and former Chiefs offensive coordinator. And the last that we've heard from that is they haven't responded, and that Eric Bieniemy is looking for a head coaching position. But really, beyond that, we haven't heard much about the Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator position. We know that they've interviewed Charles London with the Atlanta Falcons. We know that they've interviewed in-house candidate Tim Kelly. We know that they've requested those two interviews. But beyond that, we haven't really heard much. So I'm looking at the sit-down, and I think I said Mike Keith earlier. It was Jim Wyatt. Mike Vrabel sat down with Jim Wyatt at the Senior Bowl. And he was asked about the offensive coordinator coordinator search. And when I saw that question asked by Jim Wyatt, and it's a totally fair question, I kind of expected the same kind of response from Mike Vrabel. We've been working on it, you know, excited to get this guy in the building, so on and so forth. This is what Mike Vrabel said. Again, this article is on TennesseeTitans.com. Said when asked about the offensive line search, it's going good. I feel good about where we're at and having a plan for multiple scenarios. I've enjoyed meeting with a lot of different coaches and hearing ideas and visions, and I'm trying to figure out what's best for us. It will happen when the time is right and when the opportunity is there. Multiple scenarios? Well, what are the multiple scenarios? Does that mean you have an idea and then you have a fallback plan just in case that plan doesn't work out?
Well, it sounds to me that maybe the Chiefs, for example, could be one of the fallback plans. Maybe one of them doesn't end up interviewing, or one ends up wanting to stay. That could be the variable in there.
That's the way.
I think the ultimate fallback is Tim Kelly. I think if, I'm sure he told Tim Kelly that, listen, we are going to do our due diligence in this search. You are still in the running for this job, but we need to interview, you know, a few other guys, and most notable, you know, Eric Bieniemy, as well as Matt Nagy. And I think Tim Kelly understands that. Until, you know, either those guys decline the interview, because to my knowledge, I don't think any one of them have declined the interview in its entirety. Like, we just don't want to do an interview. Now, I understand them not wanting to do it until the Super Bowl is over. I get that. But I don't think anyone has said, no, we don't want to do the interview. So I think Tip Kelly understands that, hey, we need to go through this whole process before we name an offensive coordinator. And say if Eric Bieniemy says no, and, you know, Matt Nagy says no, then you got Tim Kelly. If, you know, Eric Bieniemy says yes, Matt Nagy continues to want to be in Kansas City, then it's between Tim Kelly and Eric Bieniemy. So I think there's three different scenarios here. One with Nagy Bieniemy, one of the two, one without him, and one with Tim Kelly. So that's why I can understand the scenario thing, and I'm pretty sure, because to me, Tim Kelly is always going to be there. Is that fair to Tim Kelly? Probably not, you know, but he's not going to say, after all of that, he's not going to say, you know what, just because you didn't interview me first, I don't want the job. Hell no, he's going to take that job if it's offered to him, you know? So I believe Mike when he says we have, you know, we're prepared for different scenarios.
I totally agree with you. Uh-huh. I think that's – and this is just my interpretation of it based off of Mike Vrabel saying there's multiple scenarios, and then also when the time is right and the opportunity is there. Well, the opportunity to hire Tim Kelly is there right now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not going to take that opportunity, then that leads me to believe that likely is not your first option. Mm-hmm. That's likely not the path that you would like to go down, at least option 1A. And then saying we have multiple scenarios. I think that's why they requested to interview both Bieniemy and Nagy. There's something about that system. There's something about the Kansas City Chiefs that the Titans want to emulate. And honestly, kind of surprises me. Mm-hmm. When Tim Hasselbeck said a few weeks ago he thought it was going to be Nagy, I thought he was crazy. He doubled down on it earlier this week, and I still thought, I just don't see it. He doesn't run the system. I don't see Mike Vrabel wanting to completely overhaul this offense or change this offense. But if it's multiple options, then I would say, okay, then you interview both Bieniemy and Nagy. You're at least request to interview both. And if both of them say no, then you move forward without them. If one of them says yes, okay, great. Then you interview that guy. And if he's the guy, then that's your guy. You interview both. Then you hire your favorite option. But then you have different options there, different options that are available. Both fall through. Well, you have Tim Kelly. That's how I interpret this, just based off of what Mike Vrabel said, what we've heard, what we know that the Titans have done in terms of requesting interviews for those two. I think, and this is total opinion, their number one option is either Nagy or Bieniemy.
Yeah, I think whichever guy.
And then go from there.
Yeah. I'm sort of inclined to believe that, say if Bieniemy wants to, say if he says, you know, I'm going to take the interview, and takes the interview, come back. I don't know if then does Nagy take the interview as well, because he wants to hire. Honestly, I do believe he wants to hire one or the other. But one of those guys wants to stay and continue to, you know, pad their stats to become a head coach.
But not both of them.
Not both. But I don't know if Bieniemy staying in Kansas City helps his cause. It may help Nagy if he stays there. But I don't think it'll help Eric Bieniemy. I think it would, you know, be wise for Eric Bieniemy to, if the job is offered here in Nashville, take it. Because now you're separating yourself from Andy Reid. Andy Reid will always be sort of there when people talk about you because you sort of grew up in that system in a sense. But if you're able to, again, if you're able to come here and show that you have what it takes to develop an offense, and this offense ranks as one of the top offenses in the National Football League, I do believe that now your opportunity to get a head coaching job becomes a little bit easier. Because now people are not thinking, well, it was because of Andy Reid. Well, now you're apart from Andy Reid. I think Matt Nagy, whether he stays or goes, you know, if the offense improves or whatnot, he still is going to be in line for a head coaching job, whether he stays in Kansas City or not.
Chris in Nashville texts in the text line, philanthropy by WilsonCountyHunter.com, says, why would Bieniemy want to do a lateral move to a team that clearly isn't in the level as his current team? And I think that's a fair question. I don't view it as a lateral move.
This is the reason why.
Ownership of the offense.
Exactly.
Right?
Totally.
It's just like a job, any job. A lot of times you don't see, you know, individuals moving laterally from one job to the next, unless them leaving that job and going to the next allows them for vertical movement. Mm-hmm. You're not going to go to another job unless they're paying you more and the work environment is a little bit better. But if everything is equal and you're just moving without any lateral, without any potential for lateral movement, vertical movement, I mean, then you're not going to leave your job. That's why Eric Bieniemy would leave Kansas City, because at Kansas City, it's been proven there's going to be some hurdles for vertical movement for you. You know, if you leave that nest of Andy Reid and go somewhere else and learn and show you can fly apart from Andy Reid, then there's more likely a chance for you to get vertical movement than it would have if you stayed in Kansas City.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I also wonder, too, are there any other wild cards out here that we haven't heard about from other family trees, maybe even the San Francisco family tree, that we just haven't heard about? I wonder behind the scenes if there are any, you know, call it, for lack of a better term, a secret candidate or two.
There totally could be. The only way I can't see that is maybe they're not with a team, so you don't have to request to interview, so maybe it wouldn't be put out there publicly. But if I'm an agent, I want that to be put out there.
If you are,
you know, tight ends coach, quarterbacks coach, whoever, for the San Francisco 49ers or whatever team, I want the world to know that my client is interviewing for the offensive coordinator position with the Tennessee Titans. I don't see the benefit in not announcing it unless they want to be respectful to the team that they're with. But I don't see how a team would grant permission for you to interview and then you wouldn't want to at least make that public. I'm not counting it out as a total possibility, but that's just my thought process.
Yeah, it's noteworthy that Nagy and Bieniemy, their names emerged almost instantly.
Yeah.
You've always known about Tim Kelly. But then other than that, it's been very quiet for, what, 2 going on 3 weeks now. You haven't heard a single other name come up.
Nope.
Okay, here's a long shot. This is just a shot in the dark. Like, my eyes are closed. It's as my son would say, it's dark, dark outside. I got blindfolds, and I'm just throwing the dart and hoping. Here's a dark horse. But I'm going to tell you after the break, because it's going to take a little explaining to sort of get where I'm going with this.
All right, okay. D-Mace's conspiracy theory coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
How open are you to changing the offensive scheme?
Well, I think we change things every year. And I want coaches and people, and we had this conversation this morning, that are versatile, that have multiplicity, that can adjust, that aren't just married to one specific way of looking at a player, of coaching a scheme, coaching a technique. You know, there's a bunch of different ways to rush the passer. It's a bunch of different ways to block or to run a route. Outside zone, inside zone. The whole idea is to have people that, you know, can function and excel and doing different things. And I want to do that offensively. I absolutely do. I want to do whatever's best for our football players, and they can excel. The young players that we saw this year, you know, finding ways to help them make a jump, and then the veteran players that we'll have back.
There you go. That was Mike Vrabel on the offensive coordinator search. And, of course, he's at the Senior Bowl this week. He sat down with Jim Wyatt on Tennessee, and his article is up on TennesseeTitans.com. When asked about the offensive coordinator search, Mike Vrabel said they have a plan for multiple scenarios. What are those multiple scenarios? And waiting for when the time is right and when the opportunity is there. That, to me, I have implied that as they're waiting for the Chiefs to be done with the Super Bowl. That's when the time is right. And either Nagy or Bieniemy is their number one A and number one B. And then they'll have a fallback plan on Tim Kelly just in case. That's just my interpretation of it all. But D-Mace, you have a theory.
Yes, I do. My darn headphones are going in and out. I got a theory here, and listen, it's a shot in the dark, as I said before. It's a long shot. But hear me out on this. There's a offensive coordinator out there who was recently released, or it was a mutual, sort of a mutual thing between the two. And again, it is a long shot, and I don't expect this to happen. But if you look at Greg Roman, and again, it's a long shot. It's a long shot. Look at Greg Roman and what he was able to do in that, with that offense. Now, after a while, you know, people look at it as, well, it really, you know, they got to a point where if they're not running the football, they can't do anything. Well, you know, I love the Baltimore Ravens, love Lamar. But they didn't surround Lamar with any legitimate pass catchers other than Andrews. Now, Andrews is a top two or three tight end in the National Football League. So they really only surrounded him with a tight end. They tried with receivers, but it just, for whatever reason, they were getting hurt. It just didn't work out. Hollywood Brown was inconsistent. They traded him away. I think with a Greg Roman offense, you're capable of running the football with Derrick Henry. Now, you don't have to do all that stuff that he was doing with Lamar. You don't have to do it with Ryan Tannehill. But he will put together a really good run package, and then he will put together something off that run package, play action pass. You surround that quarterback in this position, in that type of offense with playmakers on the outside, I think you will see even more of what that offense can do. I don't think you saw that offense in its full totality when he was in Baltimore. Why? Because they didn't have consistent play on the outside. Now, you saw it here and there, and because Lamar is so dynamic that it made the offense, it enhanced the offense, but it still was stifled because they didn't have guys on the outside that just could flat out play. If you get some guys on the outside with that type of offense, you can run the football with Derrick Henry. And off of that, sort of like what and why do I always forget his name? In Atlanta. Head coach in Atlanta.
Arthur Smith.
That's what Arthur Smith did, sort of. They ran the ball, and then play actioned off of that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of their big plays came off that inside, you know, that quick in route, 12-yard in route, and you know, those receivers, whether it was AJ or Davis, break a tackle and they get another 15-20. A Greg Roman offense can work, but you got to have playmakers in it behind you. They already have the running back. They just need more playmakers on the outside. That system that he has, it could work. And Greg Roman could be that dark horse guy that you look at and say, you know what? If we add a receiver to Treylon Burks, we already got the tight end. We already got Derrick Henry in the backfield. That offense can morph a little bit, or we can see that offense in its totality. It was stifled again in Baltimore. I think it was stifled somewhat because they didn't have guys on the outside that could play or was consistent enough that Lamar could throw the ball 25, 30 times a game. I think if you bring that offense here in the right situation, it could work. Not to say that Roman's coming here. It's a dark horse for me. That, because we talked about, well, could there possibly be another guy that we just don't know about? You know, that if they don't get Nagy, if they don't get Bienemy, if he really doesn't think Tim Kelly is the guy, is there a guy that's in their back pocket they say, well, listen, if all else fails, we can go to this guy?
A couple thoughts.
Uh-huh.
One, I just think that Greg Roman offense, the offense that they ran in Baltimore, mm-hmm. was so hyper-specific to Lamar Jackson yeah. and his abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And Lamar Jackson, he has a fine arm, but he very obviously struggles in deep ball situations. And that is such a run-centric offense. And not just run-centric like the offense mm-hmm. that the Titans or the 49ers run, but running with the quarterback. You need that quarterback to fit that system. I don't know if Ryan Tannehill could do what – Ryan Tannehill cannot do what Lamar Jackson does.
But then it's the development of Malik Willis in that offense, which I think he would embrace that type of offense. Why? Because that's sort of the type of offense that he was running in a sense. So he's more.
It might play to his strength.
It might play more to his strength. Not to say that it's going to happen, people, because I doubt it. It's like a 5% chance that it happens. But that's just, to me, you sort of kill two birds with one stone or knock down two birds with one stone, because now you can develop your quarterback in Malik Willis and see what he really has. And you can run an offense that has proven can be a high-powered offense.
Now, one thing that we played in that clip from Vrabel that caught my attention too is, and I do think this is the mark of a great offensive coordinator. You're not married to one way of doing mm-hmm. everything. You look at the personnel that you have, and you look at your different ideas, and you build your system from there. That caught my attention when Vrabel said that. He said versatility mm-hmm. would be important. So, to me, that's. That's a guy that has had a lot of success. I would not mind bouncing off ideas from him. Let's sit him down and let's talk to him. Like, I do wonder how many people they have talked to. Even if it's not a formal interview, I hope they're not just narrowing it down to three guys, two guys with the Chiefs. And what, there's got to be other guys, right? We just don't know who they are.
Charles London. Mm-hmm. But I think that was, that's a Vrabel buddy. And Vrabel, loves his guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They spent time together in Houston. Another thing with Greg Roman, they could hire him right now if they wanted to.
Yeah.
Like, if he was the guy, they very much so could hire him right now. Maybe he is in consideration. Mm. I don't see this personnel and this team, this roster, as currently constructed, being successful in a Greg Roman offense.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Malik Willis, because that would be, a Greg Roman offense, a Lamar Jackson-style offense, would fit Malik Willis very well. But are you investing your future in Malik Willis? If so, fine. Mm-hmm. I'm not.
No, I'm not.
I'm not. I'm not hiring an offensive coordinator to fit Malik Willis's needs. If Malik Willis develops mm-hmm. into a backup, then fine. But I can't. Malik Willis was not a first-round pick. I don't think the Titans view him as the future of the franchise. Mm-hmm. I know I don't view him as the future of the franchise. I couldn't bring in an OC to tailor to Malik Willis's strengths just to see if he can come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. No, and you're right. And I'm not saying that, this would be – it would be a move to develop Malik Willis. I think if you put Malik Willis in a Shanahan offense, you will see a much different player, because I believe it would work. One, I believe that Kyle Shanahan will coach him up. They will develop him. It's been proven that they can do that, so they would develop him, one. But I think it would work more to his strength at this part of his career, his early part of his career, doing things that he feels comfortable doing. And maybe he doesn't feel comfortable in the Roman's office. I don't know. But to me, whether it's a Kyle Shanahan offense or Roman, which I need to sort of look back and see what that derives from, where did he sort of learn that up? Because that's the same offense they were running in San Francisco. The years they went to the Super Bowl, I believe, with Colin Kaepernick. But we wouldn't bring in Roman or anybody that runs that style of offense to develop Malik Willis.
Right.
It would be Malik Willis' development would be a byproduct of the offensive coordinator coming in. But it would give, we could put together a package or some plays that he knows that he feels comfortable with. And if he does have to go out there, he can go out there and play. That's what happened to Brock Purdy at the beginning, it was like, we're going to put together a package of things that he feels comfortable doing. And once he gets that, and once he builds that confidence, which he started to build, and then you saw the playbook start to open even more. You know, they were doing that, you know, during the playoffs. It was like, we're going to rely on the run, we're going to rely on the run. But I think eventually they were going to have to open up the passing game to score points against Philadelphia. You know, they're going to try to play it safe and run the football, keep it close. But I think if you're going to make plays and win games and score points, you got to start passing the ball.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. There is one coach in this state where it feels like deja vu all over again, and it was on full display last night. I'll explain coming up next, plus your phones as well. 615-737-1025. It's Caroline Willie, D. Mace, 1025, 1063 The Game.
We're better than this, but you know what? We're, tonight we weren't. You know, yes, I mean, I know these guys want to win. I know they want to do the right thing. And when you get in the game and when you feel like you're getting great looks at the basket and it's not going in with guys that you want to shoot it. And that's the one thing I told our guys, we can't stop shooting it.
There you go. That was Tennessee head basketball coach Rick Barnes. The Vols with a brutal loss to Florida last night. They fall to an unranked Florida team, 67-54. Tennessee, the second-ranked team in the country going into that game after Alabama got whooped by Oklahoma over the weekend. And look, I know that there is this narrative out there about Rick Barnes that he can you can have a great regular season, and then in March, it just completely implodes. And I know that there are so many Tennessee fans that despise that narrative. But prove me wrong, because I feel like this is a constant trend with Rick Barnes, is that it's like four steps forward and then a couple steps back. And then they dig themselves out of a hole. And that's kind of been the trend with Tennessee all in conference play. You know, they start off conference play. They just barely squeak by a honestly not very good Ole Miss team to begin conference play. Double-digit win over Mississippi State. Double-digit win over South Carolina. Double-digit win, or just almost double-digit win over Vanderbilt. And then they lose to Kentucky, a game that they were heavily favored in. Beat Mississippi State, blow LSU out, blow Georgia out, play a really good game offensively against Texas over the weekend, and then you lose to an unranked Florida team. It is just, it feels like a constant theme with Rick Barnes, and I know Tennessee fans love Rick Barnes, and I know that he's a good head coach. It's just, I feel like there's this ceiling with Rick Barnes, and we're continuing to see it year over year over year, that just when Tennessee feels like they've got a taste of success, it just gets pulled right up from underneath them.
I think you're going to – definitely that's going to be the label on Rick Barnes until they have a deep tournament run. And obviously they've gone to pretty great lengths to keep him. He gets paid really well. And, you know, he's not as, I don't know, charismatic as Bruce Pearl. Some people still are living in the past with that, even though Bruce Pearl put them on probation when it was all said and done. I do think Rick Barnes – seems on the surface to run a pretty classy program. I think he's a guy that seems to say the right things and try to do right by that, think long term about his players. So I think that's admirable. I don't think it's time to panic after one loss. Now, the loss to Florida, Florida's a bubble team. They're playing at home. You know, they got some pretty good players on that team. So I don't think that's the worst loss. The one thing that I think is something to look for Tennessee is when I think they have a defense that can win a national championship. I mean, you look at the numbers, they have the best defense in the country. Yeah. Nobody better. That's going to be their most nights. The question is, when they get to the tournament, and I think they'll be a pretty high seed, will they be able to have the quality offense game in and game out, or could they go cold for a game that could cost them?
Like they did last night.
Right. They went 5-for-25 from three last night. I don't think they have the go-to offensive guys that could, you know, that would have a small chance of going cold in a game. That's the thing about the NCAA tournament that's so tough. And that's why we love it, right? As upsets happen, you can have the one bad game. So you try to avoid having the holes or your flaws catch up to you. So I think that's still going to be the thing about Tennessee. They have a lot of good players, a lot of really good players. Yeah. They got size. They got quickness. I love Ziegler. But scoring?
He had a good game last night offensively.
Yeah, I think scoring is going to be the question, right? You know, they don't have the the go-to guys that you know, the two or three guys that just cannot be stopped. Remember that they weren't they were on fire. If I remember correctly, they didn't miss in the first game. They were hitting everything, and then they got beat in the second round. Everything that was going in the first time wasn't going in the second time.
Right.
No, you're absolutely right. This team has three guys that are, you know, averaging around 11, 12, and 13 points, somewhere in there. Only three guys, and everyone else falls, you know, below double digits. I think if you're going to win a national championship, like Willie said, you got to have the ability to score points. Now, the one thing that they do have that they have not had since Rick Barnes has been here is a top five defense. And in some, you know, if you total up all the majors, they might have the number one defense in the country. They've been hovering the last couple of years around that 20, 25, somewhere around there, 27. But this is the first year up until now where they have a legitimate, you know, flat out top five defense. And like I said, some can argue it's the best defense in the country. That's going to carry them far, I believe, this year. It might even carry them farther than what they have gone in previous years under Rick Barnes. Because if you, especially in a tournament, if you can stop teams, because things, as you start to win games, things get a little bit closer and closer. If you have a shutdown defense, then I'm picking you more times than not to win basketball games. But they're going to have to get, you know, secondary scoring, you know, from other people, other than their top three guys. And like I said before, the top three guys are averaging anywhere from 11 to 14 points, and everybody else is below that. You got to have someone that when you get in the tournament, yes, we're going to play great defense, but what if two of those three guys are having an off night? Then somebody else needs to pick up the slack, you know? So do they have that right now? Probably not, but they need to develop that, you know, before tournament starts. Because if you can't score when you need to, like playing defense, they're going to play defense. I know they are.
Yeah.
But if you can't hit those tough buckets or those clutch buckets, you know, at the end of games in the tournament, then you're not going to make it very far. And they got to find someone other than their top three scorers that can be knockdown players.
And I think the SEC has gotten to the point, and this is good for SEC basketball, it's a deep league now. There are not a lot of pigeon teams. You know, it's deeper than it was. A few years ago, I would say, when Rick Barnes got there, once you got past three or four teams, there was kind of a drop-off there. I think it's a deeper league, and even though they didn't do tremendously well in the Big 12 Challenge, the Big 12 might be, along with the Big 10, easily the two best, deepest leagues, right? So you're going to lose a game in the conference here and there. So I wouldn't panic over a loss to Florida. That's not what I would call a bad loss. What would be bad is followed up with another performance or two and have it snowball on you. You're going to lose a few games. But, you know, you want to maintain that one seed, two seed profile. I think they have an opportunity to do that.
And while the individual loss to Florida isn't a bad one, you can recover from a single conference loss. I think it's the overall view as a whole. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that Tennessee is going to play Auburn, you know, a top 25 team in the country, and beat Auburn. That's just how Tennessee goes. They have a loss against a team in which they were favored, and then they'll go on a run of really
good
wins.
But it's Kentucky. Kentucky is... They're in the NIL world. They're paying $16 million. I hear for their. Sorry, about Shebue is the defending.
Shebue is a great
player.
Yeah,
here.
He's great.
I mean, so, but this Kentucky team isn't Kentucky.
No, but they're playing better. Like I think that loss sort of springboarded them. They were in a kind of a funk until they won that game. They've played much better since then, I would say. It's not the best Kentucky team. I grant you that
right, for
sure. But it's Kentucky. They're bringing something to the table.
But in that game, I mean, I looked at it like, the way that Kentucky was playing up to that game, I thought Tennessee should blow this team out. I know it's Kentucky, but this is not a Kentucky team that is playing like Kentucky. But I view this Tennessee team like you're going to lose to Florida, a game that you absolutely should have won, and then you're going to beat Auburn. And I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Auburn handedly, honestly. And that's no knock on Auburn. It's just kind of the trend that I see with Tennessee basketball. They fall back, and then it's like a wake-up call, and they get things moving offensively. They're they're able to get things running, and then they'll just fall back again. They've got a tough game against Alabama in a couple of weeks as well, and those are not going to be easy wins.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They get those tough wins, schedule. You're going to lose a few. To bad teams.
Well, but how many bad teams are there really? You've got a Missouri on the schedule. I mean, Auburn at home. I like their chances to beat Auburn, but Auburn's pretty talented. They're bringing a lot to the table. Alabama is national championship kind of material too. So I just think you got to be prepared. You're going to lose a few more games in the league, but that's not anything to panic over. It's over. I'm looking at what do you look like when you're in the tournament? These things that you were talking about, Derek, the defense. I'm sold on. The offense, that's what I want to see more. Could they be picked off by a team that shouldn't beat them in the tournament, which has happened to them a few times here recently with the bad offensive performance in particular.
And that's the tough thing about the tournament. You have one bad day, one bad game offensively, and you're done. Yeah.
And I do think sometimes coaches get a bad rap because that happens to them. Like Roy Williams for years
had a bad rap.
Jim Boeheim had that rap because when you get there every year, you probably have a lot of different things happen.
Rick Barnes has that rap.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, he has that. And so he's got one Final Four. But for a long time, Roy Williams had that. Mm-hmm. Too many early exits, a team that would be top five in the regular season at Kansas, and then get picked off by somebody.
He won one at
eventually,
Kansas.
Eventually, he broke through.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I was going. Mm-hmm. Barnes has been around for a long time. But I still think that could happen, that his teams could get on a run. A magical run where everything is going right? You're hitting all those shots, which they're capable of, and you go on a roll, and nobody can stop you.
As far as Tennessee is concerned, I wouldn't be surprised if they made an Elite Eight Final Four appearance. Yeah. I also wouldn't be surprised if they got bounced in the first round. And that, I think, has to be so frustrating for Tennessee fans, to see how much talent they have and then to just not know how sustainable that's really going to be when it matters.
I will be stunned if they lose in the first round. There's no way they're losing in the first round.
You hope
second
not.
Round, that's happened. I still like my chances there. I'm going to go out on a limb. I do think Sweet 16 for sure for this team. Final Four, they've got Final Four defense. I want to see the offense develop a little bit more. That I'm not quite sure about. They got the size, they have the depth, but the go-to guys at the top, when you need a basket, who are you going to? That's what I want to see a little bit more of.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, as hard as the NCAA tries, they just can't do what they want to do. But they're trying. And we'll explain coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.